Remote hearings are held in accordance with House Rule 10.01. This rule has been posted online and is linked to in our public meeting notice on the House website. All remote hearings will be recorded and live streamed by House Public Information Services. Members have the contents of their virtual packets available to them, and for the public, these materials have been posted online. Members, if you're looking for these materials, they are in one place, they've been attached to the calendar event that you received from Ms. Burt today. To get on the list to be recognized by the chair, members using the Zoom interface have the ability to raise their hand via the app, and Ms. Burt will place your name on the list to be recognized. The CLA will now take a roll of the members.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair?
Present.
Representative Davi?
Present.
Representative Kreisha?
Present.
Representative Bennett?
Present.
Representative Daniels? Is excused. Representative Bamith?
Present.
Representative Dravkowski?
Present.
Representative Erickson?
Erickson, present.
Representative Feist?
Present.
Representative Jordan?
Present.
Representative Marquardt?
Marquardt, present.
Representative Mueller?
Mueller, present.
Representative Richardson?
Present.
Representative Thompson?
Thompson, present.
Representative Walgamott?
Walgamott, present.
Representative Shung?
Present.
Representative Joaquin?
Joaquin, present.
Madam Chair, we have 16 members present and there's quorum.
Thank you very much. Representative Marquardt, have you had the opportunity to review the minutes from Tuesday, March 8th? And if so, would you like to move those minutes for approval?
Madam Chair, I will move approval of the March 8th, 2022 minutes.
Thank you, Representative Marquardt. Are there any objections to moving the minutes from Tuesday, March 8th? Hearing none, this will be a voice vote. Make sure you take your mute off. All in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. Hearing none, the minutes are approved. For our first bill presentation today, we will be hearing from Representative Dabney about a bill that relates to computer science courses in schools. Members, it's our intention to lay this bill over for further consideration and possible conclusion in a future omnibus bill by 11 o'clock this morning. Chair Dabney, would you like to make a motion to move House File 3243 before the committee to lay it over for further consideration and possible inclusion in an omnibus bill?
So moved, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Dabney. Before you introduce your bill, I understand that you have an author's amendment you'd like to offer to get the bill into the shape you'd prefer. So I am going to go ahead and move the A1 amendment to be before the committee to put the bill in the shape the author desires. Now that the amendment is before us, Rep. Dabney, would you please tell us about your amendment?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Briefly, members, the A1 amendment makes a few changes. Several of them brought to me by my second author, Representative Nash, requesting an assessment be done by this working group rather than a summary. Including a representative from the state's Public-Private Technology Advisory Council partnership. Then others have brought forward the request that we have a career and technical education teacher on the work group, given that it's often CTE teachers who are teaching computer science in schools. And then a simple clarification that a reference to commissioner early in the bill is a reference to the Commissioner of Education. With that, Madam Chair, I'd ask for member support.
Thank you very much. Members, any questions on the A1 amendment? Okay, not seeing any, this will be a voice vote. All in favor of adopting the A1 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Okay, hearing none, the A1 is adopted. Representative Dabney, to your bill.
Thank you very much, Representative, Madam Chair. Members, Minnesota often prides ourselves on the strength of our education system. But as we've explored in this committee, there's places where we clearly fall short. And one of those places is on a increasingly foundational skill for the 21st century, for all of our students to be able to thrive and for our state to be able to thrive, and that's computer science. As one of my testifiers will speak more eloquently than I, Minnesota literally ranks 50th in the nation in terms of access to computer science. And what we know is compounding that 50th ranking is the racial, ethnic, gender, and geographic gaps in access to computer science that we see in Minnesota. We have an opportunity to close those gaps and to bring Minnesota students the sort of opportunities they need and that our employers need them to have. But to do that, we need a plan. And so House File 3243 creates a working group to create a blueprint, to create a map on how we're going to get there. Madam Chair, my testifiers can speak more eloquently than I. If we could go to Ms. Roberts, I'd appreciate it.
Absolutely. Our first testifier today is Amy Roberts with code.org. Ms. Roberts, welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Madam Chair, thank you very much for the time this morning. My name is Amy Roberts. I am a Senior Director of Government Affairs for Code.org. And Code.org is a national nonprofit dedicated to expanding access to and participation in computer science and increasing participation by women and underrepresented racial and ethnic groups. And I apologize, I am once again in travel status and in an airport. So. I will do my best to keep distractions to a minimum. It's very busy today. Madam Chair, with your permission, I do have a very quick PowerPoint I would like to share with the committee and the committee members.
Okay, proceed.
Along with our advocacy coalition, Code.org developed 9 policy recommendations to make computer science a fundamental part of the state's education system. All 9 policies promote equitable access to foundational computer science. We know through the past 9 years of our work that adoption of the computer science policies is correlated with a greater percentage of high schools offering computer science. Minnesota right now has adopted 2 of these policies. That puts us, as Representative Dabney mentioned, last in the nation with only 24% of our high schools offering computer science. One of our 9 policies is developing a state plan or a foundational blueprint. State plan is sort of the generic term that we use to cover the different ways states across the nation approach developing their blueprints. We know that the foundational blueprint is very much correlated with a greater percentage of high schools offering computer science. In states that have adopted a plan, 60% of their high schools offer computer science. In states without one, 47% of their high schools offer computer science. Given the role that a blueprint can play in helping a state build its foundational K-12 computer science programming, we have seen a great deal of movement in the development of state plans. In 2017, there were only 2 states with plans. As of the end of last year, 23 states have adopted plans and 7 more states are in progress with their plans. These plans are multifaceted. They focus on diversity, professional learning, teacher certification, pre-service in some instances for teachers, standards, outreach and support for local districts, and of course, funding. Today, Minnesota schools are moving forward and trying to meet the demand for computer science. You'll hear from another testifier later about more of what is happening at the local level. But without state leadership, this ad hoc approach that we're seeing at the local level is neither equitable nor is it sustainable. Looking at our data today, students at schools with greater economic challenges lag significantly behind those schools that do not experience those same challenges. Similarly, when we look at participation, those disparities continue, and we can see only 23% of our females are participating in computer science. Disparities also exist when we look at our traditionally underrepresented groups in computer science. Creating a statewide blueprint can help address these gaps. Looking again at the nation as a whole, the top 12 states on this chart all have adopted computer science state plans. Many diverse organizations have come together to work on this legislation. I thank you very much for your time this morning. I thank Representative Dabney for bringing this legislation forward, and I thank you for your time.
Thank you very much, Ms. Roberts. Our next testifier is Jennifer Rosato with Computer Science for All Minnesota. Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the Education Finance Committee for allowing me to speak today. My name is Jennifer Rosato. I am the director of the National Center for Computer Science Education and an assistant professor at the College of St. Scholastica in Duluth, Minnesota. Personally, computer science was not my first, second, or even third career choice. When I did decide on computer science, though, I was confident that I could succeed because I had positive high school experiences with programming. Today, however, I'm here representing Computer Science for All Minnesota, where we are focused on supporting policy change towards equitable and sustainable CS education. CS for All Minnesota includes representatives from K-12, higher ed, industry, and nonprofits. Over the past 3 years, we've been actively engaging in conversations, engaging with communities, and collecting data to understand the landscape of computer science education for our state. Our findings and insights resulted in a set of briefs identifying systemic needs for Minnesota, including topics such as defining K-12 computer science, advanced placement course taking, teacher licensure, teacher education programs, and professional learning opportunities. We've also hosted 15 listening sessions to gather feedback from over 70 computer science ed stakeholders, including teachers, administrators, college faculty, and industry, many of whom are parents as well. These sessions made it clear that Minnesotans want computer science in K-12 schools. Participants expressed many reasons that CS is important, from helping students become engaged citizens in a tech-driven world to providing opportunities for all students to understand the tech careers key to Minnesota's economy. However, stakeholders noted that it will be imperative to have direction and support from the state. Many believe that computer science learning needs to begin in elementary and middle school, that the state must identify what CS content should be taught and who is eligible to teach it, and that districts will need guided support and funding to implement CS education. Minnesota school districts see the need to bring computer science to their students, but they cannot do it alone, and they want to do it in coordination with each other. A task force bringing CS ed stakeholders together to create a foundational blueprint can provide the direction and guidance that is needed for our schools to implement computer science education, helping to bring Minnesota out of last place.
Thank you very, very much, Ms. Rosato. Our next testifier is Jeff Tollefson with MinTech Association. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Jeff Tollefson, and I serve as president of the Minnesota Technology Association, a coalition of more than 200 companies united building a stronger innovation economy and tech ecosystem in our state. Minnesota has a rich history of technology innovation, with our medtech industry amongst the strongest in the world. But what's not so known is that Minnesota was once the center of the modern computer industry, with companies like Control Data, Honeywell, Unisys, and Cray Research producing the mainframe and supercomputers that really helped change our world. But while Minnesota may no longer be home to significant tech manufacturers, we are home to some of the world's largest tech-enabled companies, those leveraging technology to fuel their increasingly tech-powered business models. These are companies like Optum, Cargill, Target, U.S. Bank, Land O'Lakes, so many others. But unfortunately, the demand for digitally skilled computational thinkers in Minnesota far outweighs our available supply. And to this end, the Minnesota Technology Association, along with 25 of the largest tech employers in our state, has launched the Tech Inclusion Alliance, an employer-led initiative to not only ensure Minnesota companies have access to the skilled talent they need, but that our tech workforce more closely mirrors the rich diversity of our communities. Just 2 weeks ago, senior leaders of these 25 corporations met again to discuss key workforce initiatives, including our collective support of this bill. There was collective surprise, and I must say embarrassment, that Minnesota is dead last in the country in the percentage of high schools offering computer science curriculum. Please know that Minnesota's business community stands ready to support our teachers and schools in developing an impactful plan and partnership so that we can produce the tech talent our state needs for continued economic success. We are relying on legislative leaders to recognize the need to prioritize computer science education as other states have done and build this foundational blueprint so we can get back in the technology innovation game. We cannot continue to fail our students in offering a pathway to the in-demand careers of today and tomorrow. We thank you in advance for your support of House File 3243 and look forward to being your partners in this important work.
Thank you, Mr. Tollefson. Our final testifier on my list today is Pa Vang, a student at Park Center Senior High and also a PSE student at Northern Hennepin Community College. Welcome, Ms. Vang, to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Devney and members of the Education Finance Committee for allowing me to speak here today. My name is Pa Vang. I am a senior at Park Center Senior High and a PSEL student at North Hennepin Community College. I first got into computer science in sixth grade when my school offered transitional clubs, which were short classes during school time. Among other clubs I experienced, I chose a coding club since I was interested in the fact that I could learn how to create my own game. We used Scratch, which uses drag-drop blocks to code, and the club was taught by my math teacher who had no prior experience in coding. That was the first and last time I got to participate in learning how to code in middle school. Because I had no extra knowledge in coding, I wanted to learn more. My high school offered technology elective classes, and I took a class on game design where I was one of the only three girls in a class of about 20 students. Because I did not learn text-based programming languages in that class, I took a one-credit web design elective class in 11th grade at North Hennepin. It was there where I finally learned how to code using HTML and CSS. I like computer science because it allows me to digitally build projects I envisioned, such as my first dress-up game I made in ninth grade. As a woman, person of color, and the only person in my family who knows how to code, coding to me means that I can positively impact people in my community through the power of computer science. Some kids like how I was may not know that computer science even exists, that there are resources out there, and that it is open for kids to learn. Not only will being exposed to computer science at a young age help break the stereotype they will grow up in, but also bring more diverse workforce to every single community in Minnesota. I sincerely hope that every student gets the chance to learn computer science in school as a part of the curriculum to help expose them to a world of opportunities. Please support this bill, House File 3243, so that Minnesota can plan to expand the equal opportunity to learn computer science to students in all schools. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Vang. Members, when this hearing was posted, the public was provided with instructions on how to sign up for testimony during the public portion of the bill hearing. At this time, we have not received any requests for public testimony, so we will go to questions if there are member questions. I am not seeing any. Rep. Davney, any closing remarks?
Well, Madam Chair, thank you. Members, thank you. I said before the testifiers that they would speak more eloquently than I did, and I think that was fulfilled, giving you a sense of where Minnesota stands nationally, where the opportunity is, where the need is, and where the sense of urgency needs to be. This is a gap in our education system that we can close. We can get ahead of this We need a plan. We need a blueprint. That's what House File 3243 provides. As we move forward, members, I ask for your support. Madam Chair, thank you very much. And thank you to my testifiers.
And with that, Representative Dabney renews his motion to lay over House File 3243 as amended for possible inclusion or further consideration at a later date. Members, at this time, I'm going to turn the virtual gavel back to Representative Dabney. Chair Dabney, you now have the gavel.
Thank you very much, Representative Sandstead, and thank you for chairing the first part of the committee. Members, our next bill presentation will be hearing from Representative Feist about a bill relating to access to menstrual products in schools. It is our intention to lay this bill over for further consideration and possible inclusion in a future omnibus bill by 11:55 a.m. Representative Feist, would you like to make a motion to move House File 2750 before the committee to lay it over for further consideration and possible inclusion in a future omnibus bill?
Yes, Chair Dabney, and I do have an amendment, and I'm not sure if that comes after or before this.
Well, you just made the motion to move the bill before the committee. Now, if you'd like to move the A3 amendment to be before the committee and describe it, that would be perfect.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. This amendment was in response to Representative Erickson's very helpful input at our previous hearing, and it will modify the school district operating capital equalization in order to ensure that this bill has no net impact on statewide levies.
All right. Representative Feist moves the A3 amendment. Members, any questions? Seeing none. This is a voice vote. If members would unmute, all those in favor of the A3 amendment to get the bill in the order that the author prefers, please signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed? Motion prevails. Representative Feist, to your bill is amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In this committee, we spend a lot of time discussing what we think is best for students. This bill is one where students have told us what they need, and we should listen. Amina, a student at Columbia Heights High School, told me the story of going to the school nurse for a tampon and her name being added to a long list of students who owed the school 25 cents per period product. And Elif, a student at Hopkins High School, came to me proposing this legislation because she saw firsthand how pervasive period poverty was and wanted to do something about it. Period poverty is a widespread issue that directly impacts students' ability to get a full education. One out of every 10 menstruating youth miss school during their menstrual cycle due to a lack of access to menstrual products and resources. In a national survey of 1,000 menstruating teens, 1 in 5 struggled to afford period products, and 4 in 5 either missed or knew someone who had missed class time because they did not have access to period products. This absenteeism impacts educational attainment directly and indirectly through its correlation with increased depression and anxiety. This bill requires that schools provide period products in bathrooms for students grades 4 through 12 and is funded through an increase of $2 per pupil in the operating capital revenue. We ensure that students have toilet paper, paper towel, soap, and Band-Aids. We should ensure that students have period products as well. This is a wise investment since helping students who regularly miss school catch up is much more complicated and expensive than proactively ensuring that they don't miss class due to period poverty. Notably, this cost impacts school ability to invest in all students. Providing these products openly has the added benefit of normalizing conversations around periods to reduce the shame or stigma attached to this normal bodily function that impacts a full half of the human population. In addition to our testifiers today, I urge you to read the numerous statements submitted by students sharing their personal experiences and perspectives around period poverty. The Advocates for Human Rights and Mid-Minnesota Legal Aid have also provided statements in support of the bill. Please join me today in supporting students who have called for this legislation. Thank you.
Chair Dabney, you're muted.
Not anymore. Thank you very much for that introduction, Representative Feist. Thank you, Ms. Burt. First on the list of testifiers is Elif Ozturk, a sophomore at Hopkins High School. Ms. Ozturk, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Dabney and members of the committee. My name is Elif Ozturk, and I'm a sophomore at Hopkins High School. The first time that I truly became aware of the toll that a period takes on a young girl in school was during my eighth grade. Each and every day that I went to the girls' bathroom, I would hear whispers of girls asking friends for products. I could feel the heightened stress caused by that time of the month. What truly frustrated me, though, was the fact that I had friends who didn't just forget their products, but couldn't afford them in the first place. I had friends who didn't, I had friends whose parents couldn't.
Ms. Burt, did we just...
Looks like she dropped off.
Her? Okay.
Can you hear me?
We can now. Ms. Ostrich, is that you?
Yes.
Okay. Welcome back.
Sorry about that. No, I think it just like glitched me out. Okay. I had friends who decided to just skip school during that time because a 14-year-old girl can't always handle the stress of doing geometry while blood is leaking onto her chair. I thought to myself, how is this fair? How do we expect our girls to carry this burden on them throughout the school day and still perform well? My number one priority should be to learn, not to find a pad. So I could no longer be complacent with this injustice. During the fall of my ninth grade after school, I emailed various representatives hoping they too would see my perspective on this. I received an excited response from Representative Sandra Feist and began working with her. Later, we teamed with Beth Gendler at NCJW and decided on the language. This is a low-cost effort that would help so many lives from having to miss out on their right to an education. Lives like mine, lives like your daughters, your nieces, and your granddaughters. At Hopkins, we didn't have tampons or pads available to us. We didn't have enough from our nurses, who often paid for them out of their own pockets. We provide free toilet paper, but we don't provide free tampons. We have been failing our girls for far too long. It is time to provide the one product that will allow them to peacefully go through the school day. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Ostrich. Next is Tobby Sanders, also a student at Hopkins High School. Ms. Sanders, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Toby Sanders, and I am currently a senior at Hopkins High School. I would like to share with you my insight based on personal experience on why I know that House File 2750 is necessary to not only make period products more accessible, but to decrease the stigma surrounding menstruation. Throughout my years in high school, I have heard and experienced many unpleasant situations involving dealing with periods in school. One notable instance for me, and one I am sure many menstruators can relate to, is when I bled through my jeans during the school day last year. I went to the bathroom towards the end of the day just to see that there was a red splotch on my light wash jeans. This was obviously mortifying, and I had no choice but to change my pad, leaving the stain there and praying that no one noticed. If there had been period products in my bathroom at school, this embarrassing situation would never have happened. Imagine an alternate reality in which this bill had been written and passed in 2020, and there were period products in the bathrooms of all Minnesota public and charter schools, including my school. Knowing that I did not have to discreetly grab a tampon or pad and head to the bathroom during class, I would have gone to the bathroom earlier, preventing the whole situation in the first place. By having period products in school bathrooms and commonly seen throughout schools, not only would they serve the purpose for which they were intended, but they would also decrease the stigma surrounding periods. In my case, maybe I would have asked a friend if they had a sweater that I could tie around my waist to hide the stain. My story is not a unique one, and the hypothetical scenario that I shared can easily become reality if House File 2750 is passed. So for the sake of all menstruators' hygiene, self-esteem, and well-being, I urge Minnesota lawmakers to vote to give all menstruating students in Minnesota free period products provided to them in school. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Sanders. Next, Evelyn Gore, a student at Egan High School. Ms. Gore, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record. You've seen us doing this and proceed with your testimony. My apologies.
It's all good. Hi, my name is Evelyn Gore. I'm a senior at Egan High School, and I was one of the leaders who worked to end period poverty in District 196. The District 196 Period Poverty Project initially started out through an Honors 10 speech class where we were given the task to write and present a group speech about a topic that we were passionate about. With a group full of all women, we found common ground with the issue of period poverty. As we spent more time researching the jarring statistics, our passion grew. I remember sitting in class and shyly asking the question, what if we could actually make a difference? I was expecting a pessimistic response, but to my surprise, I was met with a response full of passion just as strong as mine. Within minutes, we were emailing our superintendent, Mary Krieger, and inviting her to come and watch our speech presentation. After partnering up with our Women's Empowerment Club, speaking at several school board meetings, and surveying our own school body, District 196 awarded us with a $10,000 grant. This grant tangibly allowed us to actually make a difference. Today, in District 196, you can find free tampons and pads in gender-neutral, women's, and at least one men's bathroom for every school. This school year has been the only regular school year where there have been free menstrual products available in our bathrooms. And after not even a full year of school, our Period Poverty Project has made an impact in more ways than we could have imagined. Hundreds of students who weren't able to afford tampons or pads are now given the access that they always deserved. Our students who don't have tampons or pads at home can now take as many as they need. Our students who previously would have wasted time in the bathroom stall frantically texting students, desperately asking for a tampon, now won't have to miss class. And our students who didn't have a pad now won't be forced to make a makeshift toilet paper pad in the bathroom. Our students that menstruate who don't identify as women can finally find and use the products that they need without having to confront a potentially traumatizing situation. And our nurses who are paying out of pocket in order to provide the necessities for their students now don't have to. And with that big of an impact, we can finally confidently say that period poverty no longer can be found in District 196. While my story is seen as a success story, this equity needs to be brought to the rest of the students of Minnesota. It is not fair to assume that other districts can do what District 196 has done. My district is very fortunate to have the resources that other areas of the state do not have. So I ask you to use my Period Poverty Project not as an example for what other districts should do, but instead as an example of how providing free menstrual products for students is crucial in creating the safe learning environment that we so often claim to create. By addressing this issue at a government level, we are actively telling students that we care about and value them. Not only that, but we are also putting an effort to fight the antiquated and frankly sexist stigma behind periods. And with this month being Women's History Month, let's make history for women and menstruators. Don't just tell us that you care, show us that you do by passing this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Gore. Next, Tori Robarge, also a student at Egan High School. Ms. Robarge, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Hi. Thank you, Chair Dabney, and good morning. My name is Tori Robarge. I am a student and advocate from Egan High School. Thank you for your time. I would just like to start off by acknowledging some of the concerns that had arisen during the last meeting. While I can understand that this bill could be interpreted as another mandate, I would like to reiterate the fact that period poverty is not a COVID-19 issue. Period poverty is not a political issue. Period poverty is not a way to impose power over school districts or to question their ability to make their own decisions. Period poverty is a health issue and it is an equity issue. In our school district alone, 23% of our students utilize the free or reduced lunch option. Out of that 23%, 14% are women that menstruate. If the families of students are struggling to provide their children with food, then menstrual products are most certainly on the back burner. Students have no control over their own bodily functions, nor do they have control over their parents' income or their ability to gain access to these products. As part of our research, we wrote and administered a menstruation-based survey to our student body at Egan High School. We found overwhelming support for the institution of free products. When asked if there had ever been a time when they didn't have access to a product, 195 students offered us with answers. 66% said that they didn't want to miss class by going to the nurse's office. 35% said that their teacher wouldn't let them go. 18% said that they didn't have the money to give to the nurse. And 43% said that they were too scared or embarrassed to ask the nurse for one personally. By implementing these boxes into our bathrooms, we have provided a shameless, non-confrontational solution for those who need these products. According to Business Wire, almost 1 in 5 Americans have missed school due to a lack of period products. This puts them behind those that don't menstruate when it comes to education. Hundreds of thousands of people are missing out on critical opportunities like an equal, well-deserved education. We expect that due to these boxes, we will see an increase in attendance. People that don't regularly have access to these products at home don't have to be fearful of being unclean or insecure about a lack of hygiene that's out of their control. This can help keep them in the building as they are no longer at risk at peer judgment. By providing these products inside of the bathrooms themselves, we are avoiding the journey to the nurse's office. Students are able to go to the bathroom, grab a product right off the wall, and return to class. Not only are we keeping students in the building, we are keeping them in their seats.
Once more, I am urging you to understand the fact that the students of this state will be immeasurably grateful for the decision that you've made with them in mind. They will be grateful not only for the access to products, not only for the chance to maintain an equal education with their peers, but also for the work that is being done to normalize an uncontrollable bodily function. Period poverty is not something that can be disagreed with. Period poverty is indisputable, and your students need you. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Robarge. Next, Thomas Stinson, RN, a licensed school nurse at Harding High School. Dr. Stinson, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Hello. Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members, for allowing me to testify today. I'm Dr. Thomas Stinson. I'm a practicing licensed school nurse and a public health nurse. I've worked for the St. Paul Public Schools going on 25 years. Today, I work at Harding High School, which is located in St. Paul, Minnesota. And our current enrollment is close to 1,900 students. I am here in support to end period poverty in Minnesota schools. Every school I've worked, period products has been an issue. School nurses don't have funding for period products, and many pay for period products out of their own pocket. Period products is a basic need for our students, just like soap or toilet paper in our restrooms. Every single day, students come to my health office for period products. Many students don't have the money or means to get period products, so they rely on the public schools. I see 40 to 50 students a day, and students may need to wait a while to talk with me. If we had period products available in the restrooms, their needs would be met faster. Making period products more accessible will also decrease the amount of lost educational time. It is common for students that have accidents with their menses, and I contribute this to not having period products available. If this happens, the student would need to go home and miss the rest of the day. Again, this contributes to more lost educational time. We cannot expect individual schools to fund period products because they will not. We need to have legislative support. Providing period products in our public schools is a public health issue and should be a right. Please support our work to end period poverty in the Minnesota schools. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Stinson. Next, Carolyn Devereaux, licensed school nurse, District 287. Ms. Devereaux, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Of course. It was a really good try. My name is Carolyn Devereaux. So go by Kari. So my name is Kari Devereaux, and I am a licensed school nurse at South Education Center in Richfield, Minnesota, a program of intermediate District 287 that services multiple districts' special needs kids. I once read a quote by Gloria Steinem that stated, if men menstruated, it would become an enviable, boastworthy sport. Men could brag about how long, how much, the amount they used. It would be federally funded. It would be free. And there would be commercial brands titled Joe Namath Jock Shields for those light bachelor days. Gotta love her. But at my school, every month, kids with really good attendance will noticeably be absent, only to tell me upon their return it was, quote, that time of the month, with a school absence noted to be either due to the lack of affordability of feminine supplies or the fact that clothing was spilled from leaks without access to laundry at home. Kids in my office tell me how they use toilet paper, they roll up socks, how they use a younger sibling's pull-up or even a diaper inside their underwear as alternatives for sanitary pads. Working with young teens from cultures where anything remotely sexual is a taboo subject, even coming to me in the health office could be a barrier. They tentatively ask me, do you know? Their faces are red, their eyes are down. Even just asking me is a barrier. In my school, I serve kids who are on the margins. Many of my special education students, their parents have no choice but to stay home to care for their unique children. It drastically cuts into their family income when they go from 2-to-1 income to take care of their families. For my students in the alternative or credit recovery programs, many attend school in the day and they work at night. They live in large extended family groups. They pool their money to afford an apartment. There's no money for extras. For the students who are homeless or highly mobile, the need for laundry is what draws them to my office. They often miss class when they're in my office washing clothes that was soiled during a monthly cycle, and they don't have the supplies available to clean their clothes, and they're embarrassed to go to class. We stock toilet paper in public bathrooms because, as a favorite children's book states, everybody poops. Last time I checked, men did not carry around an extra roll of toilet paper and Charmin for their tushies in their backpacks to take care of their basic needs. Public health dictates we wash our hands before returning to work to take care of natural body functions and for safe hygiene. A normal body function that affects half the school instead of the whole is now considered a luxury product and not a necessity. For kids to learn, trauma-informed practice states a child must be safe as well as identify as part of the community of their schools. For students who are born genetically female, part of basic safety is providing for their normal body needs. We need to raise our girls to feel empowered while also raising both genders to respect each other in all beautiful forms. Stocking supplies in the bathroom is a small gesture, but the message we give all kids is that the girl child is valued, their bodies are respected, and schools put this action into legitimate money behind the claim that we want them in schools. The poet Amanda Gorman, who is a young voice with wisdom way beyond her years, says, "A quiet, normalized life isn't always peace. The norms and notations of what just is isn't always justice." Stock the bathrooms. Let kids stay in school. Let them focus on their literature, on their learning, and not a leak. Thanks.
Thank you, Ms. Deverill. Next, Danith Clausen, a retired educator and curriculum director from Alexandria. Danith, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record, ma'am, and proceed with your testimony. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Dabney and members of the committee. My name is Danith Clausen. I live near Alexandria. I'm a retired educator. For my entire career of over 30 years, I worked for rural school districts in Minnesota. I taught English and language arts at every grade from 7 through 12, and I was a curriculum director across kindergarten through 12th grade. I am here in support of House File 2750. We know absenteeism disrupts a student's education and damages that student's ability to succeed in school. As a teacher and as an administrator, as the proud aunt of a teacher and the proud parent of a teacher, I've been involved in many conversations that boil down to a single concern. How do you teach a student who isn't there? This bill is an opportunity to remedy preventable absences. A student should not have to stay home from school for 5 days or more every 4 weeks because she and her family cannot afford period products. Her education is too valuable for us to allow that to happen. She is too valuable to our community and too valuable to us for us to allow that to continue. House File 2750 gives her the security she needs so she can focus on her learning and prepare for her future. Thank you for allowing me to speak on behalf of our students.
Thank you, Ms. Clausen. And last of the testifiers is Sharon Stein McNamara, President-elect of the Minnesota Psychological Association. Dr. McNamara, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. Sharon Stein McNamara, psychologist, President-elect for Minnesota Psychological Association. I am representing many psychologists who join in the agreement that House File 2750 should be made into law as a way to support girls and women, young women, in our schools. It's well known that as girls develop and begin to menstruate, that there is an associated risk of depression and anxiety at the time of the onset of menses, and that this fact that they may not have access to products or that they may not have the money to be able to afford taking care of their basic needs of being having laundry supplies, ability to feel safe at school, that you're not going to be publicly humiliated or embarrassed in front of your students, your peers and teachers, is an important aspect of being able to grow up as a female in Minnesota. So I strongly support that it's an act that is fairly small in many ways, but it's a huge act of service of saying, you are cared for, we care for you, we want to have the environment in which you are being educated to be supportive of your physical needs. So I strongly support that this bill go into law. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. McNamara. Members, when this hearing was posted, the public was provided with instructions on how to sign up to testify during the public portion of this bill hearing. We received no requests from the public to testify. So, members, questions? Representative Youakim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Not as much a question as just a comment and a thank you. Just amazing to hear the students' testimony today and what they've done to advocate for everyone in their school. Raising your voices like this and getting action is completely amazing, and I just want to thank you. It's a skill that you're learning that will carry you far in life. And I just want to thank Representative Feist for carrying this bill. It has definitely been one that has been around the block for a while. I've been a co-author, I think, for about 4 to 6 years now, and want to thank the work that Jewish Community Action, JCW has done. I'm sorry, I'm getting the acronym wrong, and all the work they've done with this bill as well. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Representative Youakim. Other members with comments or questions? Seeing none, Representative Feist, do you have any closing remarks?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to echo Representative Youakim and thank all of our testifiers, and in particular the students who have really brought this issue to the legislature and advocated around the state for its passage. It's just really, really inspiring. And I just like to close, I'd like to echo something that Ms. Evelyn Gore said. She said that, you know, when we pass legislation like this, it says that we care about and value all of the students, and I just think it's a very common sense bill. It's something small, a relatively small investment of state dollars that will have a really massive impact on classroom attendance and, by extension, just ensuring that all kids in Minnesota really have access to a quality education. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Feist. And with that, Representative Feist renews her motion to lay over House File 2750 as amended for possible inclusion or further consideration at a later date. And let me add my appreciation to all of the testifiers, but again, the echo, particularly the students. Much appreciate your engagement today and your willingness to come and testify before this committee. Thank you. Members, with that, we have completed our work for the day. We will see you tomorrow. The committee is adjourned.